On today's episode of Locked On Oilers, will David Pastrnak be on the radar for the Edmonton Oilers? Brendan Escott from 630 Ched stops by to tell us more on that and just what to expect from the Edmonton Oilers offseason this summer. All that and more on today's episode of Locked On Oilers.
Your Locked On Oilers, your daily podcast on the Edmonton Oilers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome back to the Locked On Oilers Podcast. I am your host and former Oilers game day producer, Brett Holden. As I already mentioned, today on this episode, we are bringing in 630 Ched's Brendan Escott to chat a little bit about the offseason for the Edmonton Oilers. What can we expect? And is David Pastrnak an actual realistic option for the Edmonton Oilers? As he may have said, where there's smoke, there may be a fire. We will get into that in just a second. But also on today's episode, we are going to be talking a little bit about Zach Cassian as we go into his season report card, and it wasn't great. So that'll be coming up after we talk to Esko. Plus, as well, let's go back and take a look at our predictions from earlier this week. They weren't great, but we did get one. So we will get into that and so much more in today's episode. But thank you so much for making Locked On Oilers your first listen every day. We are free and available wherever you find your podcast. So let's head over to our conversation with Brendan Escott. Alrighty, we are now joined by 630 Ched's Brendan Escott. Thank you so much for joining us today. How are you, Esko?
Things are good, man. It was obviously a lot of fun in the postseason, but a lot of late nights. So it's been nice to kind of settle into the summer and exhale, as it were. But yeah, all is good.
Well, that's the thing too, is that it was so busy for those few weeks. Every day, every second day, there was a game, off day. What are they going to do? What are they not going to do? And now we're into the off season. Now we're just like, okay, well, hey, we signed Woody. So there's a lot of moves that need to be made. It seemed like last year was going to be kind of the off season that we look back on. And now it's going to potentially be this one. Guys like Evander Kane, who was massive for the team. He's a UFA. Ryan McLeod and Kyler Yamamoto are RFAs. And as well as Jesse Puljujärvi. Brett Kulak came in halfway through the season and he was fantastic. He's a UFA. There's only so much cap space to go around. Can the Oilers really get those key parts back? Who's going to be kind of the casualties of the cap? Is there really an answer right now, or is it just up in the air and it's just talk right now?
Well, there's a lot that hangs in the balance while we await the final answer on Evander Kane's contract status with San Jose. That seems to be the big thing here, because the arbitrator that is waiting to sort of preside over the case that I don't know how to put it in layman's terms, essentially, but he filed a grievance over the way he left San Jose when they did terminate his contract back in December. So now the NHL has one arbitrator that they work with, one, and he gets holidays like the rest of us, apparently. Probably not a good time of year for him to be taking them. But nevertheless, the problem with this is that that date won't come until after free agency is actually opened. So there are some things that Holland will be able to do in the meantime. Like you mentioned, Brett Kulak. I know that's with the way he performed in the postseason and down the stretch, that's got to be a real high priority for this team. You got to think about the fact that Florida surrendered a first round draft pick to acquire Ben Sherratt. And I would suggest that the Oilers, while giving up a second for Brett Kulak, got a lot more out of that player. He's from here. And I'm hearing that it's going to be really up to him as far as if he signs here and for how long. Is it 2 years? Is it 3 years? How long's the cup window in his mind? So, but maybe that's the answer right there, Brett, is the window to win the Stanley Cup is finally open. And so you got to figure out what the starting goaltender is going to be next year. And cap casualties happen every single season. And I think fans are going to have to be prepared that it's somebody that this team has tried to groom over the last while, and it hasn't necessarily materialized like they would want it to. Whether that ends up being Jesse Puljujärvi on his way out, or if Kyler Yamamoto doesn't reach a bridge deal, I guess those are a couple possibilities.
Well, and that was what I was going to mention as well. You were kind of hinting towards the Jesse Puljujärvi thing. Let's be real. Ryan McLeod, Jay Woodcroft said in his exit interview, well, it was his exit interview, not the one that he had after he signed his contract, but the one directly after the season. He was asked what one of his major things that he did coming into the Edmonton Oilers after being hired for the first time on February 10th. And he said that he really established the spine of those forwards. And that was McDavid, Draisaitl, Nugent Hopkins, and Ryan McLeod. Those four centers, excuse me. Now, does that mean that next season the Oilers are going to be going into a first line without Leon Draisaitl on the wing? Was that just something that, you know what, he's injured, let's just throw him out there, and you know, you got Connor with them? Or do they go back to the spine and just do what they need to?
Well, the one thing we know for sure is that Woodcroft's going to have a lot of time to mull it over now with his job security firmly in check, and he's going to have a whole season worth of time to deploy them differently. I imagine that just given the way that he approached the 11 forwards and 7D and the 12 and 6 and kind of bounced back and forth between those two things, like, he likes to keep his options open. That's what he does. To me, the team performs its best when you've got all three of its strengths down the middle. Can you have Ryan Nugent-Hopkins as the third line center of this team the way he performs in the faceoff circle? I don't think so. I really don't. So in a perfect world, to me, you've got somebody maybe more defensive minded in that spot, somebody more reliable to throw out. So you don't have somebody like Leon Draisaitl called upon to take every crucial defensive zone draw down the stretch of a playoff game, because if you're in a couple of 7-game series on the tail end of an 82-game season, that's asking a lot of your superstar players. So to me, while I think it's something that they can roll with, and the regular season's a different animal, I don't know if that's a player you maybe acquire at the deadline to be more of that patrolling lockdown third line centerman to allow Nuge to thrive where he does on the penalty kill and on the power play, and then allow him maybe more minutes on the wing with one of the top two guys. Because the fact of the matter is both McDavid and Draisaitl love playing with Nuge on the wing as well, because he's such a cerebral setup player. I just don't know if that's the best thing team-wise in terms of going the whole distance to win the cup.
Now, so you kind of mentioned something that's kind of interesting to me. It's just that defensive play, I guess, or defensive face-off prowess, I guess, that Nuge hasn't really shown. I assume that you're kind of poking towards here. Now, there's somebody that I think is the perfect fit for the Edmonton Oilers, and that is in the bottom six for the Edmonton Oilers. That's Ilya Mikheyev. The guy had 21 goals this season, one of the best penalty killers in the league, and the guy can almost outskate Connor McDavid. Do you think that's a guy that the Edmonton Oilers can try and pull in here?
He's definitely a player that I think would upgrade. Sure, I'll go as far as upgrade the penalty kill. It gives them a better option. And, you know, I don't know that Derek Ryan is going to be counted on as heavily as he was down the stretch. So do they go down the same road they did in poaching that speedy, pesky, hardworking two-way winger like they did with Zach Hyman? Possibly. I know there was certainly a point not that long ago where Mikheyev was considered a trade option for this team. So the problem with him is he's a winger, right? He doesn't take those faceoffs. So if you're going to park him in the bottom six, you better be sure that Ryan McLeod's ready to take that jump and be that third line centerman for you. Otherwise, maybe you're better allocating those dollars elsewhere. I guess we'll see how things shake down. But the bottom line is, like you said off the top, this is going to be as interesting an offseason as last year's was.
Well, we got a couple more here just to kind of fire it off. There are two positions, two kind of areas, I guess, that the Oilers really need to focus on in this offseason. A, obviously, is whether or not if Evander Kane does stay or go. If he does go, what are some options for replacements for the Edmonton Oilers?
It's a good question because I don't know that you replace Evander Kane with just one player in today's NHL. There's not a lot of those guys out there, right? So now to me, you're looking at who brings that sort of physical predisposition and are they available out of that market? So I've heard talk about Josh Anderson being a potential target. You know that Montreal is going to be open for business this offseason. It's a very flexible situation in Montreal. So he's an option, but he's an injury prone option, right? And he scores a heck of a lot less than Evander Kane does. So I would wonder whether a player like Mason Marchment, and then you start maybe pursuing a bigger fish in goal, or maybe pursuing does that, again, it's all about how you're allocating the dollar value. So if you miss out on Kane specifically, I think the best thing that you do is you find a couple of grittier bottom six guys that can bring that attitude that Kane brought, because you've got the scoring up top and maybe you don't need to splurge that much on those goals in the top six per se.
Well, and that was the thing that Evander really brought, was kind of just the you're not going to even think about touching Connor McDavid because Evander Kane's right there and he's going to be breathing down your neck. And it's scary to play against a guy like Evander Kane. Now, the guy who's not exactly scary to play against physically, but with his stick certainly, and has kind of had some rumors around him. And I'm not sure if this is kind of my NHL, like Chell video game general manager cap coming on here, but David Pastrnak doesn't exactly seem too happy. The Oilers don't have all the space in the world for him, but could that be realistic, or is that, again, just a video game general manager cap coming on going, hey, we can get him?
No, I think there's absolutely smoke to that for a couple of reasons, right? Like he's coming off of a pretty reasonable cap deal, but he's also in a situation where he could bridge right now. I mean, this is a weird salary cap situation. If I'm a superstar in the NHL that's coming up on my big time deal, I don't know if coming out of 2 years worth of a pandemic is where I want to sign that big ticket. And I want to put myself in the best position to thrive moving forward. So what did we see? We saw a guy that we know has the intangibles come here and score at a 40-goal pace. What do you think is going to happen if you put David Pastrnak on Connor McDavid's right wing, right? What do you think is going to, that's guaranteed production. So would there be interest? You better pick the phone up and make the call. The question becomes, what's the price tag? Is the player willing to take a little bit less to earn a little bit more later on when he's getting paid for a 40-goal season? I'd have to look at what he got this year, but you know he'd be getting paid based off of a lot more production in Edmonton from next season than he would based on Boston this season.
Alrighty, let's end in the crease. Obviously, Stuart Skinner is going to be one of the guys in the net for the Edmonton Oilers. Is he going to be the guy? I guess that is for him to basically make the call for him. But is there anybody that the Oilers, like massive fishes that the Oilers are kind of fishing out of the water here? Or are those, what's the situation looking like here? Is it bleak?
How big a fish is Darcy Kemper to you, I guess, is my question. I mean, the fact of the matter is his contract does expire at the conclusion of this Stanley Cup playoffs run. And I'm hearing a lot of talk these days that Pavel Francouz might be forcing some sort of a goaltending problem here in the final stages of what's been a remarkable, if not tailor-made, run in the year for them to go win the Stanley Cup. So all of that spells to me they don't have as much faith in this guy as would convince me that he's going to re-sign there. So if you're convinced that you're going to put a solid defensive team in front of Darcy Kemper, if he can stay healthy, he's a good 1A goalie next year to pair with a kid that I think is probably the longer-term future. Skinner gives you a lot of reason for optimism. He's so mature, but let's get a guy in there who can win with this team now, and then Stewart can be the guy that wins with the team a little later on too.
Mature and a hometown kid, and apparently Frankie is saying goodbye to Darcy. But thank you so much, Esko, for joining us today. We got some goss from you today. Hopefully we can get you back at some point or numerous times throughout the offseason here. Where can everybody find you?
Oh my goodness. I'm on Twitter at Brendan Escott. That's Brendan with two E's, Escott with two T's, if you aren't familiar. That's the best place to find me for work related stuff.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Esco. We shall see you soon.
Pleasure's all mine.
We just want to thank Brendan so much for stopping by and chatting with us for those 10 minutes there. Some interesting names for the Edmonton Oilers to keep an eye out for. Thank you again, Brendan, for stopping by. Maybe he will stop by again some point, or maybe a couple times throughout this summer. Alrighty, let's move on to Zach Cassian first. Before we do that, I want to tell you about our sponsors over at BetOnline. BetOnline.net is your number one source for all your betting needs and sports info. Find all the latest sports developments, league reviews, and news, including this year's NFL full season. The regular season feels like it's right around the corner. Plus, that game five is tonight in Denver. That might be interesting as well. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sporting wagering information, including live betting, esports, and scores, and much more. Plus, BetOnline remains the best spot for all your sports scores, podcasts, and news this season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to check in on all your favorite sports and events, including MMA, boxing, and golf. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and action. BetOnline, where the game starts. Alrighty, let's move on to Zach Cassian as we continue with our season report cards throughout this season. And well, unfortunately, people, it's not great, this report card for Zach Cassian. Mostly A's and B's so far. We had one or two C's for a couple forwards, but I'm not sure if that's going to be the grade that Zach Cassian ends with today. Zach Cassian this season played 45 games. He had a little bit of an injury-riddled season. He had a concussion early at the start of the year from a fight. Then he broke his jaw as well. I'm pretty sure from a fight too. Then you kind of saw his physicality fade. He wasn't as effective physically, I guess, and he wasn't there. At times, you're just like, why is he even dressing? Because he's not doing anything, especially in the playoffs, which we will get to in a second. In those 45 games that Zach Cassian did dress in for the Oilers this season, 6 goals, 3 assists, 9 points. Honestly, I didn't know that 3 assists was even possible. I'm almost impressed. I can't lie, I am almost impressed that you managed to get only 3 assists. You had Connor McDavid on your team. You couldn't have picked up a secondary assist somewhere. You got 3 in 45 games. 3 assists. Holy cow. Should we get into playoffs? Should we not? No. Let's take a look at the numbers right now for Zach Cassian at full strength and as well in all situations. I should just say 5-on-5 because that is really the numbers that really matter. 4-on-4 you don't get too often. 3-on-3 doesn't really matter. I don't think you can really get a 6-on-6 unless that would be really fun. In all situations, here's the thing about Zach Cassian. His goal production, obviously, with 6 goals, 10 plus Edmonton Oilers had 10 goals, or 10 Edmonton Oilers, excuse me, had 10 plus goals this season. Zach Cassian wasn't one of them. You take a look at statistics, it's kind of in your favor, and you're not on the right side of the statistics. What are you doing here? So, in those, in all situations, Zach Cassian had a 3.14 goals for per 60 minutes. 13th on the team, and 5-on-5, he was 14th on the team with a 2.74. In all situations, defensively, he had a 2.72 goals against per 60, which was 12th on the team. And at 5-on-5, he was a 2.64 and 14th on the team. Let's be real. Zach Cassian's not playing on the power play. He's not playing on the penalty kill. So he's really only playing 5-on-5. His 5-on-5 numbers, he is 14th on the league in goals for, and 14th, or in the team, excuse me, and 14th on the team in preventing goals. That's not even really middle of the pack. That is the lower half of the middle of the pack. So you're not producing offensively 5-on-5. You're not producing defensively 5-on-5. You're not going to play any other situation other than 5-on-5. You're not hitting. You're not fighting. You're not protecting players. You're not even producing secondary assists. You had 3 assists all season in 45 games, Zach. That's embarrassing. That is embarrassing. There are so many other, not even top talents, there are so many other better hockey players out there that the Edmonton Oilers can get for way, way, way cheaper than Zach Cassian. But yet, here he is. It seemingly has been a part of this leadership group for the Edmonton Oilers for how long? And now is the time that is a good time to let him go? After the fact that when you're already playing 11-7 in the playoffs, let's get to the playoffs now, when you're playing 11-7 in the playoffs, so you're already playing a forward down, you're still playing Zach Cassian? When Zach Cassian is invisible at all times, he's not going to be physical in the playoffs in situations where you need to be physical. He's not going to score you that big goal. He's not going to prevent you a goal either. What? Why are you here? And I mean that in the nicest way, because Zach Cassian did have a pretty solid Edmonton Oilers career. I mean, I look back at the 2017 playoffs, and you take even just take a look at that series against the San Jose Sharks, and he, other than, well, really, no, I'm not even going to say Connor McDavid. He was the Oilers' best and most influential player in that series. Where did that go? It's just gone. His biggest highlight since those playoffs in 2017 was fighting Matthew Tkachuk, and since then, he's been invisible. Literally since then, he hasn't even shown up. In the playoffs this year, in 16 games played, 2 goals, 2 assists, 4 points. 16 games played. In the biggest games of his career, he didn't show up. In the biggest games of the Edmonton Oilers season, he didn't show up. Yet the Edmonton Oilers are paying how much for him? $4 million? $3 million? When the Edmonton Oilers could go get a guy like Ilya Mikheyev for what? $2 million? $2.2 million? And you get a guy who's scoring 20-plus goals, who can kill penalties, who can skate like the wind. Zach Cassian, easy, easy, and the first F we have given here at Locked On Oilers. Just mortifying, genuinely, when you take a look at the numbers, mortifying when you take a look at what he did for the Edmonton Oilers over the past season. It's sad. It's sad, really. A sad fall from grace, kind of, for Zach Cassian, as he was. Oh, I won't say a favorite in Edmonton. But, I mean, sometimes I used to work at a store that sold jerseys, and quite often people would come in going, do you have a Cassian one? Do you have a Cassian one? Oh, I love Zach Cassian. I love Zach Cassian. Now you go around Edmonton and people are going, when is this Cassian guy just going to leave, Matt? It's sad. It is sad. It is. Now, let's move on to our predictions from last week, or this week, I guess, at the start of last week, or this week, I should say, excuse me. We made a couple of predictions, 4 of them to be exact. 1 of them have come true so far. So we will get into that in just a second. But first, I just want to thank you so much for tuning in to Locked On Oilers every day and making it your first listen every day. But for your second listen, make sure you tune in to Locked On NHL, as Locked On NHL covers the playoffs like no other. Hear the latest news and opinions from local experts every Monday through Friday. It is free and available wherever you find your podcasts. Alrighty. Let's move on to our predictions. As we mentioned, we got four of them from this week. One of them was right, so we will go over those ones that we got wrong and the one we got right, and we will make predictions for next week as well. So the first prediction we made this week at the start of this week was we would see a Jay Woodcroft re-signing in Edmonton, and guess what, baby? We did. Sound the alarm. Jay Woodcroft re-signing with the Edmonton Oilers for 3 more years. Still seems... maybe up in the air isn't the right way to put it, but it seems like Dave Manson and the rest of the assistant coaches haven't been finalized yet. But let's be real. The work that Dave Manson and the thing about Dave Manson, too, is that Jay Woodcroft consistently brings up Dave Manson. Consistently. So I truly think that whatever the Oilers did this season, a whole bunch of credit, obviously, and a lot of the credit needs to go to Jay Woodcroft. But a lot of it does also need to go to Dave Manson. And especially what he did with those defensemen. Made Cody Ceci a top pairing. Top pairing defenseman, excuse me. Tyson Barrie just really upped his game down the stretch as well. Brett Kulak was a massive addition for the Oilers and really bought into the Oilers' philosophies as well. So that really helped the Oilers defensively, especially with a goaltender who was kind of hit or miss. So we will see which goaltenders, maybe a Darcy Kuemper that Esko may have mentioned as well. But yes, Jay Woodcroft re-signing for the Edmonton Oilers, massive, massive for the Oilers. The next prediction we had for this week was we would see an Edmonton Oilers transaction, and we didn't. We didn't. I'm sorry. I also prefaced that or made that prediction hand in hand with the Edmonton Oilers also signing Andrei Kuzmenko. That didn't happen. Literally about 3 minutes after I recorded that episode, Andrei Kuzmenko signed with the Vancouver Canucks. So it wasn't the best timing. So thanks, Dan Milstein and Andrei Kuzmenko. But yes, Kuzmenko did end up signing with the Vancouver Canucks. And the reason why I bring that up as well, not only because we are talking about the predictions, but let's not be too hard on the kid. Now, I realize that people don't really care about Twitter and stuff like that. So there may be some people who like players who go on to Twitter and see the stuff that fans are saying and really do take it to heart. I don't think Andrei Kuzmenko is one of those guys. So all this stuff that people are going, why didn't he go in there? He's not going to win. He's not going to win. Let's be real here. Andrei Kuzmenko, who's a young man, is going down to Vancouver, a beautiful city in Canada, one of the most beautiful cities in North America. He's going to go play there with somebody he's familiar with in Vasily Podkolzin. He was wined and dined in Vancouver and felt like he was important, and that was what he needed to feel. Plus, he was getting guaranteed top 6 minutes when he wasn't going to get that in Edmonton right now. Not right now. I'm not saying he wasn't ever going to get it, but at the present moment with the Oilers roster still kind of in limbo, you couldn't promise anything to the kid. Plus, he's a fantastic power play player. The Oilers couldn't promise him a top unit spot either. So, for a kid who's sitting, would he most likely have more success, at least as a team or winning-wise, with the Edmonton Oilers? Probably, maybe. But he's going to be more utilized and overutilized, potentially, in Vancouver and be promised more minutes right now. You're not going to sit there and hope a team in limbo is going to, maybe give you those times, give you those minutes, give you that playing time. when you have another team who's sitting there going, yeah, come here, here's the money, and we can promise that to you. So, Oilers fans, let's get off of it here. Let's move on. Andrei Kuzmenko did not sign with the Oilers, and the Oilers didn't have a transaction. So, two L's right there. That's okay. And the final prediction that we had from last week was the Edmonton Oil Kings were going to beat the Shawinigan Cataract in their Memorial Cup opener. That didn't go as planned. Yeah, that didn't go as planned. The Edmonton Oil Kings were down 1-0 at one point, then we're up 2-1, then we're tied 2-2, then we're up 3-2, and then lost 4-3 to the Shawinigan Cataract and Xavier Borgo. We did talk about this earlier this week, so I won't drag it on too much, but yeah, Borgo did have a goal and an assist, including an assist on the game-winning goal for the Cataract. As the Memorial Cup continues on, the Oil Kings did go on to beat the St. John Sea Dogs the next night. So we might see that there's some winning going on. So we'll see how the Oil Kings fare in the rest of the Memorial Cup. But yes, they didn't win that first game against the Shawinigan Cataract. Now, let's move into our predictions for this week. As we only have three this week, we only have three. Four was made last week because I thought we could tie it all in with Kuzmenko in a transaction. But I was silly and bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and I was wrong. That's okay. Next week, my predictions are, the first one is, Mike Smith will announce his retirement. If you do remember, there were some reports coming out that the Edmonton Oilers had given Duncan Keith and Mike Smith a hard deadline of January 1st, July 1st, for them to announce whether or not or decide whether or not they are going to retire. Well, July 1st is this week. So July 1st is next week. So seems like we're going to find out whether or not Mike Smith or Duncan Keith are going to retire. So my first prediction is that Mike Smith will retire by July 1st. Now my second prediction is that Duncan Keith doesn't retire. I know. I hear you sighing and complaining already. I don't see it. I don't see him really thinking, you know what, this is it. Mike Smith, you could tell, it was almost like he was about to announce it at his exit press conference. He just seemed so into himself and very retrospective. Duncan Keith, not so much. I think he'll announce that this next season will be his last season, but I don't think he's going to retire this season, this offseason. So, sorry, Oilers fans. What might go into the Oilers' favor, however, is that it seems like if Duncan Keith were to retire next week, it doesn't seem like that cap, whatever they're calling it, a cap restriction or whatever the heck they are calling that if he does retire, it seems like that's not going to go the Oilers' way in the way that it was accepted upon in principle in the initial trade with the Chicago Blackhawks. Now, if the Oilers give it, or Duncan Keith gives it an extra year, the league kind of stews on it, the Oilers give their opinion and their points and pros and cons to letting him, or letting the Oilers get the salary cap retention or whatever, and the Chicago Blackhawks come in and say, hey, well, we want this, blah, blah, blah. Maybe it might actually fall into the Oilers' hands. But for now, I don't think Duncan Keith will be retiring. So, sorry, Oilers fans. Not the news you want to hear, but it's a prediction. It's a prediction. So, I may have gotten one or two right so far. So, we shall see. Now, the third and final prediction for next week for the Edmonton Oilers. Well, not even for the Edmonton Oilers. This is for the Oilers Entertainment Group and OEG. The Edmonton Oil Kings will win the Memorial Cup. You heard me right. The Edmonton Oil Kings on Wednesday, June 29th. There we go. On Wednesday, June 29th, the Edmonton Oil Kings will win their second Memorial Cup in their modern era. against, well, we shall see. Hopefully it'll be the Shawinigan Cataract, just to give Edmonton hockey fans a little extra to watch for. But yes, the Edmonton Oil Kings do play the Hamilton Bulldogs tonight, St. John in the Memorial Cup. That's a very important game for the Oil Kings tonight. That will determine if they do win standings and seedings in the playoffs for the Memorial Cup. If they lose, however, it'll then be up to the St. John Sea Dogs and the Shawinigan Cataract game. So that one will be interesting as well. But my prediction for next week, next Wednesday, is that the Edmonton Oil Kings will not only be in the Memorial Cup final, but win the Memorial Cup final. Alrighty, that's where we shall call it today. Thank you so much for tuning in to Locked On Oilers and making it your first listen every day. I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. And if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to our YouTube as well. Alrighty, that's where we'll call it. Have a great weekend. Almost said Wednesday. Have a terrific weekend. Stay safe. Don't do anything I wouldn't do.